Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. You know, when we talked about Robin Williams on the show the other day, I mentioned that we had decided to follow the request on day one of his widow to the public to focus on his work and the joy he brought to people. So we did, and your calls were amazing that day, and the clips we listened to were amazing that day. But we also mentioned that we might take up the issues raised by his suicide later in the week, and we will do that now. And I have to say, rarely have I seen this much anguish about the death of a celebrity coming at me from all sides, from people I know personally, from people on Twitter, from some of you who called in the other day. And that strong and widespread reaction made me worry about contagion in some people who might be close to the act themselves or maybe yourselves. And it made me think of a guest we had on the show last year, Jennifer Michael Hecht, who wrote an amazing book called Stay, A History of Suicide and the Philosophies Against It. You may also know her from her book, Doubt, A History. So we invited her back to share some thoughts and take some calls with me. Jennifer Michael Hecht, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much.
And your book was A Case Against Suicide. I'm curious how you reacted when you heard the news about Robin Williams.
Well, I was stunned and saddened like so many people. I think one of the things that hasn't been articulated much is that he's, as an actor, he chose a lot of roles that were wisdom roles, and they were often people who were willing to say how damaged they were. They had learned how to love, how to embrace madness and chaos, and how to be generous. And so when we see someone who seems like they'd figured it out, it's particularly painful. The way we don't talk about it is the way it feels like, well, if he can't manage it, what chance is there for the rest of us? I saw that sentiment a lot on the internet, and it has to be addressed.
And listeners, if you want to call in, our phone number, 212-433-WNYC. But I also want to give out another phone number right off the bat, and I'll mention this again later on, and that's the National Suicide Prevention Hotline for anyone who may need it. And that's 800-273-TALK. So our phones are open to talk on the air, 212-433-9692. But obviously, we are not trained suicide prevention specialists. So if you are really actively suicidal at this moment, you should call someone you know personally or call that hotline at 800-273-TALK. A listener reacted in a way that really made me think of you on day one. Let me read you part of an email from a listener who wrote, "I don't usually pay much attention to celebrities, but this upsets me. God damn it, Brian, not that I knew him, but I admired him. I hate it when people kill themselves. It is selfish and cowardly. I didn't used to think that when I lived with depression for years and saw it always as an option. I did learn, thank God, that feelings do alter if you just stick it out." And yes, besides being so powerful,
yes,
and so personal from, you know, someone out there, I thought, oh, that's Jennifer Hecht's book.
Right. Except I certainly don't, you know, the idea of cowardliness or blame is really very separate from this. I'm really trying to speak
too harsh,
to the living.
Selfish and cowardly.
It's
for
that
you.
There's no real point in that kind of a criticism. I'm really thinking in terms of the living, the way we can still save each other. And I think it's really crucial to understand that all of this talk about suicide, as you said, can bring up contagion. It can bring up just the general sense that that's one of the ways people can go. And I guess the strongest thing that I'm arguing is that it really is a good idea to think about this before you're in that kind of extreme distress, that human beings are very capable of saying, if I get a stray thought that tells me to steal something or try heroin or kill somebody, I'm not going to do those things. And suicide is something that in other cultures we had strong enough negatives against it that people were more comfortable thinking about it. And I think now we're so scared of it that we're not doing the level of conversation we need to do in order to keep safe.
And the central argument of your book, as I recall it, was that there are other people who depend on each of us, so it's not fair to others. And that's where I thought of you when that listener wrote Selfish. So it's not fair to others or to the community in some sense to commit suicide. And that's pretty harsh too.
I know. It's a strong statement, and it took me a while to fully believe it. I went into this research and study having learned the rest of this sort of secular progressive culture that your life is your own and it's almost an act of autonomy to choose about suicide. But the more research I did, the more I found that the philosophers through history who suggested that this was an autonomous decision are really in the incredible minority. Most of the philosophers through history have said that this suicide was wrong, and it was wrong because of what it does to the community, what it does to the people who love you, and even just the people who know you or know of it, and also because of what you owe your future self. The idea that your future self is going to know things you don't know now, and that you have to just give yourself a little bit of credit that you will know things later. And also to I think of Ludwig Wittgenstein, the Viennese early 20th century philosopher, who said, you know, suicide, he was feeling suicidal, and he wrote in a letter to a friend that suicide is always a kind of rushing of one's own defenses and how awful it is to rush one's own defenses. But the truth is we can decide in advance not to, and he managed to. Three of his four brothers killed themselves, but he never did.
Do you think then that that responsibility to the community applies in a bigger way to a public figure like Robin Williams, whose community extends to fans who, you know, find a lot of meaning through him in his movies and his other work, but who don't really know him personally?
Right.
So maybe it's just unfair to even expect that of somebody to, you know, to be responsible to the public that way.
Both things you just said are true. It is unfair, and it's also true. If you make yourself into a public figure, along with that come certain responsibilities and certain expectations. And that doesn't mean that, you know, we can all only do what we can do. And there's no truth that works in every single situation. There are extenuating circumstances for all sorts of things. And I certainly think end of life care is a whole different conversation. And there are times perhaps when mental despair reaches that kind of acuity where it needs to be adjudicated on its own terms. But, you know, one easy rule is if your doctor and your friends and your family would all be against this, you are probably in despair and in not quite in your right mind, and you should wait until you feel better to make these decisions. But does a famous person have a huge effect sometimes? Yes.
So listeners, take a deep breath, because what we're about to play might be a little bit hard to hear. Someone shared with us a clip of Robin Williams talking about suicide on Marc Maron's excellent podcast. Maron is also a comedian, if you don't know his work, and often interviews other comedians. So listeners, as I say, this is a little hard to hear perhaps because it's Williams talking not that long ago. And actually, Control Room, could you get me the date of this? But it was fairly recently about having had a suicidal thought, but very rarely, he said. And it even sounds like only once in this clip at a really low drunken moment. Now, we've bleeped out the F word from this, which he uses a few times. And I should also say that this is two comedians talking. Williams is being really serious, but also using some humor. And Marc Maron laughs at times throughout, which might sound inappropriate out of context, but wasn't really inappropriate at all in context. This is from 2010. And so just 4 years ago, and to my surprise and sadness, Robin Williams on Marc Maron just that recently.
I mean, you don't seem to me someone who's like morbidly fascinated or hung up on death.
No, so, I mean, that's weird. I mean, when I was drinking, there was only one time, even for a moment, where I thought, no, oh, f*** life. And then I went like, then even my conscious brain went, did you honestly just say life? I went, you know, you have a pretty good life as it is right now. Have you noticed the two houses? Yes. Have you noticed the girlfriend? Yes. Have you noticed that, you know, things are pretty good, even though you may not be working right now? Yes. Okay, let's put the suicide over here on discussable. Let's leave that over here in the discussion area. We'll talk about that. First of all, you don't have the balls to do it. I'm not going to say it out loud. I mean, have you thought about buying a gun? No. What were you going to do? Like cut your wrist with a water pick? Maybe. So that's erosion. What are you thinking about that? So can I put this over here in the what the f*** category? Yes, let's put that over here in what the f***. Because can I ask you what you're doing right now? You're sitting naked in a hotel room with a bottle of Jack Daniels? Yes. Is this maybe influencing your decision? Possibly. Okay, we're going to put that over here, and tomorrow morning. And who's that in the bed there? I don't know. Okay, well, don't discuss this with her because she may tweet it. Okay, this may not be good. Let's put that over here in the what the f*** category. We're going to put that over here, possibly for therapy, if you want to talk about that in therapy. Or maybe a podcast 2 years from now.
So I guess the thoughts of suicide he was referring to were in 2008. That podcast with Marc Maron was in 2010. And Jennifer Michael Hecht with us, author of Stay, A History and Secular Case Against Suicide. And for one thing, Jennifer, that clip made me even sadder because it sounds like, and it could be all theater and all be false and all be a mask for public consumption. I don't know. But it sounds like he was not often thinking about taking his life, not one of these people who's sort of chronically thinking about suicide,
right,
who maybe when they do it,
right,
you think, oh, well, we did everything we could. They were going to go anyway. If it was a passing moment this week, that much sadder.
Yes. And I think that that is more the rule than the exception. People, we've done a lot of different studies that show how impulsive suicide is and how blocked, even with a fence on a bridge. People go to the bridge, see the fence, can go home and don't do it. If you don't have a gun in the house, you're much safer. Not having the means, and we've seen this many times. In England in the 90s, they stopped making acetaminophen purchasable in bulk and made it in bubble packs, and the suicide rate went down because that had been a method people were doing. So I do think that I would say about half the people, half of humanity thinks about suicide now and again, at least a few times in their life. There was a study in 2006 that asked 26,000 college students all over the country, all over the U.S., if they'd ever thought of suicide. And 55% said they'd thought seriously of it at least once. But most of them said that it was very brief, lasted a day or even less. So we have to be a little bit on guard against that part of ourselves to know that that part is a smaller part, that it gets in control for very short periods of time, and we have to be in charge to ride it out. And what Robin Williams heartbreakingly just described was riding it out, knowing, and I have to say also, we don't know what was going on with him that night, but in most cases, there is alcohol or drugs involved that just make it hard to make the clear decision.
Marjorie in Belleville, you're on WNYC. Marjorie, thank you so much for calling in.
Hello. Robin Williams was bipolar. I am bipolar. I can tell you that people think that the mania, and that's all that happens, most of the time there's an extraordinarily deep depression. He talked about that. He talked about he was able to make all these people laugh, and that was when he was manic, that he couldn't feel personally emotion, and that's the depression. It is so painful. And the mania, the constant mania and jokes, is the only thing that kept him alive, that made him happy.
I don't know, though. I really don't know.
Let me finish, because this woman obviously doesn't know about bipolar disease. And when you are depressed,
all right,
you don't think about other people.
He never said he was bipolar.
You don't say to yourself, boy, when I get depressed next time, you're going away. You're in this deep pit, and it hurts so much.
Marjorie, how do you handle
it? All you want to do is die.
How do you
handle it? Judgmental. It's so ignorant of bipolar disease and depression. I can't even go there. But I could tell you that the only thing that kept him alive was the mania that made it worthwhile living. Now, he bipolar self-medicate with alcohol.
This is all so wrong.
And for the depression, to pick it up. So, you don't, lady, I'm sorry, but you don't know what it's like, and you've not talking to people that have true deep depression.
This is so dangerous.
Bipolar.
This is not good.
Well,
Marjorie,
I really appreciate your call, and obviously you two have a deep disagreement here. Jennifer.
Well, yeah. I mean, the idea that people have nowadays that depression is always this biological disease. He didn't say he had bipolar disease, first of all. It's just people's assumption because he was because his style of comedy was manic,
like that,
and
yeah.
Because we first met him and he was using cocaine, which also mimics that. But the point is that we also have to know, look, this man was depressed, but it's also true that there are people who commit suicide who it just shocks their friends and family because it can be so impulsive. Sometimes it's just human sadness, and we forget how hard and sad it can be just to be a person. Now, I have experienced depression, and I have talked to many people who have, and I've heard from hundreds of them who tell me that these ideas have helped them to put suicide, just set it on the table away from them. And that part of that is knowing that when someone with children 18 or under kills themselves, the likelihood their children's suicide rate doubles, and in some studies more than doubles. And that keeps people alive through the terrible time. That's just one example of how ideas really do matter. Of course feelings matter. Of course all these other economics and war and all these things. But ideas also matter, and they do help a lot of people.
And of course this conversation, and Marjorie, still we appreciate your call very much. This conversation is obviously about much more than Robin Williams as an individual, who few of us knew. It's about, you know, everybody else out there who may find themselves in some similar position and how to cope and how best to move on. But since the two of you went back and forth a little bit on whether he was bipolar or whether that's just chatter in the media, and I certainly agree with you, it seems much too simplistic to say the only thing that kept him alive was the thrill of entertaining people in his mania.
Right, though I do think that the arts, when it seems like, and it's not always true, but when it seems like the arts are overly represented in the Depression, you know, sometimes we do have to say it's the darkness that leads you into the arts, because you can express yourself.
And it can certainly be a key survival mechanism.
Absolutely,
for
my
many
poetry
people.
Keeps me going.
So not to diminish that. But someone drew my attention to this Facebook post by the writer Anne Lamott, who wrote books like Help, Thanks, Wow, and Stitches, A Handbook on Meaning, Hope, and Repair. Many of you know Anne Lamott. So let me read this that she posted on Facebook. She wrote, I know Robin was caught in the arms of God and of his mother, Lori. I knew them both, she writes, when I was coming up in Tiburon. He lived three blocks away on Paradise Drive. His family had money, ours didn't. But we were in the same boat, scared, shy, with terrible self-esteem and grandiosity. If you have a genetic predisposition toward mental problems and addiction, as Robin and I did, life here feels like you were just left off here one day. I guess she's talking about Hollywood, L.A., with no instruction manual and no idea of what you were supposed to do, how to fit in, how to find a day's relief from the anxiety, how to keep your beloved alive, how to stay one step ahead of abyss. And she ties us into Newtown and says, we all thought after Newtown the gun control legislation would be passed, but no, not one new law. We think in the aftermath of Robin's death that there will be consciousness raising about mental health, but I doubt it. The shock and awe will pass like it did after Philip Seymour Hoffman's death, unless we take action. But what? And even Anne Lamott writes, I don't have a clue. But then she says, here's Glenn Close's astonishing organization. And she provides a link to raise awareness and diminish the stigma of mental illness, and that's maybe the place to start.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's tricky. The problem is a lot of different truths compete, and some things help some people and some things help others. So this idea of him having demons, you know, that's something which my PhD is in the history of science, and these metaphors for madness, they help people sometimes to struggle against it, to have these metaphors, but they're also they're metaphors, and they're only so true, and they start to do damage when we believe in them too much. But I will give this metaphor that sometimes a celebrity suicide has a kind of a social echo. Don't let it get you. If you feel more despair than usual, remember that this social echo happens, that it lasts a few months at its peak often, and that it's your job to just know about it and get through it the same way we avoid other things which are terrible. But don't avoid them just by looking away like Robin Williams said in that clip of just saying, let's put it over there. Take a good look at it and say no now. It's more possible than people think.
Ophir in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I wanted to emphasize happy people, sometimes experience the depression. It's much more common than people think. You know, about, 10 years ago or so, I actually found myself, in the blink of a moment going to a railroad and thinking to, end my life. I mean, looking backward now, it sounds horrible, but I experienced it. You know, I'm lucky to go back and home and kind of realize that I need help, and I seeked help, and I, got, people helping me in therapy, and realized that I was depressed at the moment. I didn't know that, and that led to a happy life. I have family since then, but I think it's much more common, than people think. It's that moment, I think, that maybe Robin Williams' experience is more common with everyone.
Yes. Thank you so much for, if I can, Brian, just for that witness, because it's an amazingly helpful thing you just did to tell other people that you went through this, because it is more common than people think, and people are ashamed of it in a way that in the past, because we had different narratives, it wasn't always something that people kept so much to themselves. And we really have to, the most important thing is, of course, to get help. But we also have to remember that a lot of people don't do that. We have a lot of studies that show the people who need it the most sometimes need to also think about the reasons why you need to get help, why it's so important that you keep on. And that's something that we can turn to these philosophical ideas for. But we really need to just sort of remember that, as well as looking out for our friends for symptoms and things like that, we can do that a little bit for ourselves if we turn that light on inside us.
Well, I don't think we can improve on that. So I think we're going to leave this conversation here for today. Hopefully it's been helpful to some of you, either grieving Robin Williams because you knew him, as some of you who called in the other day said you knew him personally, or as fans, or help some of you who may be on the brink or may know people on the brink. And again, the phone number for the National Suicide Prevention Hotline is 800-273-TALK, 800-273-TALK. And we thank Jennifer Michael Hecht, author of Stay, A History of Suicide and the Philosophies Against It. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.